This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com and your host. Joining me to discuss the third of the triple victories needed to set us up fine and dandy for a very juicy week, Mr. Phil Shaw, Mr. Chris Pudd, welcome.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Very well, mate. Looking forward to this one. Looking forward to this week.
What's happening? What, this show?
Just life. I'm looking forward to our trip to Ajax.
Oh, is Phil Shaw coming?
No, I'm not allowed to come.
No, you're going to be my comfort animal. That's how we're getting you in. Is it companion animal? What is it? Comfort animal?
Yep.
Yeah, that's how we're getting you in, on the plane and into the ground. You're going to have to dress up in something, though.
Like a llama or something like that?
Yeah. We'll sort your costume out.
This is my claret and blue alpaca.
Yeah, yeah. I think I still have the pantomime cow costume. Yeah.
There you go.
We're save us some money there.
And it's all about saving money in the villa world at the moment.
I've just been to Dublin. That's how you prepare to go to Amsterdam. You go to Dublin. That's all I can say.
Line your stomach.
Exactly. So much to get into, and we'll try to do it as quickly as possible. There's two other Europa Vision shows out as well this week. God knows who's going to edit all this shit, but fingers crossed we can get it done in time, because we've got places to go, games to watch, people to see, flights to take, etc. We won't dally with any more small talk. Let's go straight into an ad campaign. What do they say? A word from our sponsors supporting the show. Something my old man said's been using for a few years now. NordVPN are offering our listeners an extra special deal because it's their birthday. They're offering a birthday exclusive where, as well as big savings on their plans, you get 4 extra months free plus a free Uber Eats voucher as well. NordVPN allows you to watch your favorite screens and other content no matter where you are, by switching your virtual location to access apps and websites in other countries. It also protects you from people monitoring what you are watching, which can be useful for various reasons, as well as protecting your safety. One NordVPN account protects up to 6 devices, so you can pretty much protect a whole household. To find out more about the benefits and also access their birthday savings package, go to nordvpn.com/moms. And to top it off, you also get a 30-day money-back guarantee as well. Right, Villa news time. Injury update. Is he fit? Is he not fit? Pau Torres. It's all right calling him the greatest football playing centre back since Franz Beckenbauer. But if he's not playing, he's not very good, is he?
Well, he's no use, but you've got to get him on the pitch.
He's useless if he's not playing. So it's an interesting one to see where he will surface. Will he surface against Ajax or will he go straight in against Spurs? I'd like to see him get some minutes before this Spurs game to be.
Yeah, you'd like him. You'd like to see him and Konsa at least get a 45 minutes together or whatever.
Because one problem with chopping and changing centre-back partnerships and the back four is it's hard to get clean sheets when you haven't got an understanding.
Mm.
You'll notice when you bed down that back four, that's where the clean sheets come. This is my concern. This is my concern in Europe as well, because normally in especially knockout two-legged football, you've got to be able to go away from home and be tight and strangle the teams, essentially. Whether you go there and get a 0-0 or beat them 1-0.
Or just blow them away.
But teams that score goals for fun and are open at the back don't tend to do well in European competitions. So that's my only concern. It'd be interesting to see where Torres makes an appearance this week. Ramsey, we don't know yet, do we?
No. We'll find out the night before Ajax when Emery does his presser.
Yeah, took a whack to the foot and was seen leaving the ground in a protective boot where he had his previous serious injury. So fingers crossed there. Johan Duran is back in training. Carlos is back with the group. Villa reported a club record. We've alluded to this a few episodes ago in terms of that UEFA report, which is
we were very early on that
results.
Actually.
Yeah, so we're kind of going over old ground here. Club record, post-tax operating loss of nearly 120 million for the 2023 season, one of the largest losses ever recorded by a Premier League club. This is why I keep mentioning that it's in our interest to qualify for the Champions League. That's all I'll say there. But the club have put out a statement saying these figures are in line with the strategic business plan and we continue to operate within the Premier League PSR rules. Kind of standard line, isn't it, at the end of bad news?
Well, they'd made a 400 grand profit in 21-22, so because of that it will balance things out slightly.
Yeah,
and obviously the Grealish sale and lots of other stuff.
It's not alarm bells yet, but sleep with one eye open is what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Watkins nominated for Player of the Month for February. Martinez, double save against Sheffield United, nominated for Save of the Month. European football, of course, returns. Villa need to take care of business against Ajax. There's also that subplot of the coefficient battle. So we'll be looking out for, it's essentially England versus Germany. So you're looking out for West Ham to do a number on Freiburg. And then they've also got Leverkusen, Bayern, Leipzig to keep an eye out for them. And you hope that the English team stay in it, even though we have no love for them. It all helps. That
we've got a little bit of love this year.
Opening up that fifth spot, if we need it, that is. Hopefully we won't. Douglas Luiz is back in the Brazilian squad, so well done to him. If he's a real baller, he should be in that Brazilian squad full stop. That's my test for it. This isn't like claret and blue goggles. If he is the man that everybody, they want to hype about, then he should be in that team, really, shouldn't he?
Well, it's certainly in and around it, yeah.
Yeah, but I think in it. That's my test for him. Then we'd be very excited to have the Brazilians' first 11 midfielder. I mean, that's something.
It's a good look.
And other accolades, Morgan Rogers, golden boot winner, if there's such a thing, for the
in the League Cup.
He managed 5 goals, 2 assists in 6 games for Borough as they went on to the semi-finals. Meanwhile, the Villa ladies team lost 4-1 at home to Liverpool, which is not a good look. Liverpool were recently promoted. Didn't do that great last season, but they seem to be doing what we did last season, this season. Under-21s will play, is it Lye Town?
Lye Town, yeah.
Is that?
Lye, sort of Stourbridge way.
Is it?
Yeah.
In the Birmingham Senior Cup. I don't know who keeps putting this Birmingham Senior Cup in the plan. Quarterfinals. Nobody cares. Also won the quarterfinals of the Premier League Cup after beating Blackburn 6-2. They also beat Liverpool 2-0 in the league. This is the under-21s again.
At least those results are starting to turn around. Maybe all that invested money's.
So those West Brom players we keep
West Brom bullying's paying off finally.
Yeah. There was also a fan advisory board meeting. I didn't attend. I was away in Dublin, as mentioned, but Ben was there. They put some notes out. We just put the straight notes out. I'll do my insights regarding that soon. I mean, the FA, the situation, oh, we've complied to the FA, blah, blah, blah. That's nonsense. We're waiting to see what the FA say about what the club say about that. But it just seems to be a lot of lies. And as a fan base, you shouldn't really be happy with people at a club level lying to you. And it's unnecessary. That's the thing that, you know, bugs me. So I'm sure there'll be more revelations in due course regarding that. Right, 3 points. Interesting table. Premier injuries. I keep banging on that to use Villa's injuries as an excuse doesn't really cut much mustard with other clubs' fans because there's been, I mean, Newcastle, Manchester United, Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea, Brighton, Brentford have all been having torrid times. So when you have a look at the Premier injuries table, you may have seen it, this table being reported around and about. But top of the table, in terms of injuries and days lost by players, Newcastle, clear top, aren't they? By a good couple of hundred
games. They've been absolutely decimated at times.
It really compromised their Champions League campaign as well. And their early Premier League, they never really got a sure footing because of all these injuries. But they've missed 1,333 days since the season began in terms of combined injuries. Brentford are second. Might explain why they have languished a bit this season. 1,159 days have been lost. Then Brighton. I have a Brighton supporting friend who keeps moaning about injuries. 1,093 days. Then it's Chelsea, Sheffield United, both over 1,000 as well. Then it's Manchester United and Spurs. Manchester United 979, Spurs 949. I haven't even mentioned Villa yet because we're still not featured. It's Liverpool next, 865 days missed. And then it's Villa with 806 days as of the 1st of March. So it is as Emery says, isn't it? There should have a no-excuse culture. And that's, I mean, it's what I've been saying all the time as well on this injury front. I've been well aware of what other teams have been suffering. And but there's a bigger picture, isn't there? Why is there all these injuries?
Mm. And, you know, obviously that the table doesn't vouch for the severity of some of the injuries. Villa haven't necessarily had as many, but they have had some bad ones. Other clubs, of course, it doesn't also say the level of player, shall we say, you know, like certain teams have lost big players. Newcastle have kind of had both. You know, I think Liverpool have had a couple of their big guys out. Man City are right near the bottom of the list, but they've, you know, they lost De Bruyne for a big long chunk of the season. Obviously, Villa have had three ACLs.
Yeah, Spurs, Manchester United have lost key defenders a lot of the time, so their defensive units have been severely compromised, as has Villa recently. But Villa also, you've got to remember where you go, oh, Mings, Buendia, but actually they were out before the season really got going. Buendia, before it even started, Mings in the first game. And Villa have actually been really good without them. I mean, there's a lot of context, obviously, involved in this situation. Just to judge days injuries by days lost is a very broad stroke approach. But it is an insight, and it does bear fruit to what I've been hearing and seeing over the course of the season. And the teams that I've had an inkling were badly hit are appearing high up there. And I know Villa's injury situation across the board hasn't been as severe in terms of like volume as certain other teams. But in terms of Villa, it's more the timing of certain injuries. But, you know, it's also there's a frustration with some of the injuries because some of these players are appearing on the bench but not playing. And I think I said on the Europa Vision show, it's like Torres, it's like if he's one of your first 11, if he's fit, he starts, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If he's not fit, then he's not in the match day squad. There's a kind of halfway house. It looks like Emery's trying to manage him back, for want of a better phrase, manage his injury. So he's only going to play break glass in case of emergency. But then again, well, what's the point of him sitting on the bench anyway? Point number two, UEFA announced the format of the Champions League for the 24-25 season. So there'll be a single group of 36 teams, which will replace the 8 groups of 4. And then there's like seedings where you will play like big teams, middle teams, lesser teams. But instead of playing teams home and away, you only play them once. And then they start cutting up like the top And I think it's the same format for all the three European tournaments. So the top eight go straight into the last 16. The teams 9th to 24 will enter a playoff round for the remaining eight places. And the idea is it kind of freshens it up because it's gone a bit flat and there's sometimes a lot of dead rubber games. And the idea is to get away with them. And also, for the sake of a bit more TV revenue, crowbar a couple of extra games in there.
Yeah, I did like, actually, I know it's similar in the Europa League as well, but I'm sure I read that they're taking out the sort of the safety net. So if you get knocked out of the Champions League, you're out. None of this dropping into the Europa League nonsense. And the same for the Conference League.
Point number three, he's back in. Point number three is always make a return, don't they?
They seem to somehow.
Mm-hmm. Forest referee analyst Mark Clattenburg got into a bit of a ruck, didn't he, at Forest in the Liverpool game? Quite rightly so, I thought.
Yeah, what was a howler of a decision. I mean, even kids football or in the street, I mean, if you have the ball and you have to stop the game, you know, you get the ball back. It's simple. It's been like that since the beginning of time.
So this is the Villa Leeds situation, isn't it? The old Bielsa, the goal, when he gave us a goal.
Yeah, I don't think Liverpool are ever going to do that.
No.
No, exactly. You know the situation.
Yeah, there was a collision in the box. Two Liverpool players collided with each other, but Forrest had the ball outside the box in the corner, ready to cross it in. Referee stops the game. So you're expecting at least Liverpool are given the ball, at least for them to kick it back to Forrest. But oh no, they start the move that 2 minutes later ends up with them scoring the winning goal.
Yeah, not good. And then, of course, chaos ensues at full time.
Tried to speak to the referee. He wasn't let in.
Well, the Forest owner went ballistic, ran on the pitch and had a go at the ref. Probably don't condone it, but it's also kind of, you kind of understand why he's fucked off, especially with their imminent points deduction.
Talked about they're not respecting the players here, and you know he's right on all accounts. I think if this happened in South America, I remember when a referee gave a penalty to a team once, I think it was in Colombia. I can't remember if it was Colombia. I think it was Colombia. The owner of the team the penalty was given against, and I think we may have mentioned this on the show before many years ago. The owner of the team the penalty was given against came onto the pitch and shot the ball on the penalty spot with a gun.
Wow.
So lucky that this referee is in the UK. But yeah, what are Forest paying Clattenburg for? I don't quite get it. To try to get in that referee room? Well, if he's not getting in, it's not working, is it?
I mean, is this where it's going to lead? Or is every Premier League team now going to have a referee analyst? I mean, who are Villa going to get left with?
Uriah Rennie. David Ellery, maybe. Let's go blaster in the past.
Uriah
right, let's get into the game. Fuck the referees. Let's get into this game. It was a trilogy of games that I said we have to win here. Somebody questioned this on, I think, Facebook, saying after something for the weekend, saying, oh, this isn't a West, you framed it as a must-win game. But we didn't actually frame it in isolation as a must-win game. We said it was part of a package of three. And after that United loss, and people were getting jittery about United hunting us down. And by the way, we have recent history on the onside to suggest that was a possibility, but Villa really had to respond to that and
did.
You're looking at the murky waters coming up in terms of real business, and that was Ajax, and that was Spurs, and then you got West Ham as well.
Wolves.
And to give yourself a platform going into those games that ultimately changes the complexion and alters the pressure that's on the team. And you know, we're getting into months now that the pressure will start to mount. So if you can ease that pressure in any way, it's always welcome. After winning these three games, just look at the picture now. You're looking at Spurs. That's not a must-win. It's not like a defining Champions League game. If we had dropped points against Luton or Forest or Fulham, then we could have been playing catch-up against Spurs, and then suddenly it's a must-win game. But this week, we can almost like cruise through it. Draw at Ajax, draw against Spurs, but we'll be all right. Spurs won't be gaining any ground, and Ajax, a draw away from home, is always good. So that's how we've taken the pressure off, is what I'm saying here.
Yeah, I mean, I've read it differently. I mean, I saw the comment about, you know, Luton to me was a must-win game because we saw on the fixtures, if Man U were going to Man City, the likelihood is you've got a chance to do what we should have done a few weeks ago and really pull away from them. Luckily, we did. And obviously, the week before the previous game, of course, we won, Spurs lost. So all of a sudden, it set things up well, which means it now lines things up for the Spurs home game, where it's not necessarily a must win, but you're thinking if you can win, then it really puts you in the driving seat.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, and as we've said all season, when the opportunities are there, take them.
But ultimately, I was saying this a long, long time ago, like looking at the games, three games before, and say we've got to win all three of these fuckers.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, people go, oh, well, you know, it's the Premier League, every game's tough, entitlement just because you're above them, blah, blah. No, it's like if you mean business, you can't fuck around, give away 2-0 leads against, you know, Old Trafford that we did. You can't play like you did and powder puff your efforts against United at Villa Park when you should have put them away. The Newcastle loss, you know, shit happens. They've got a style that ruffles us at the moment, which is surprising because we, you know, when we played them at Villa Park last season, we annihilated them. So
they annihilated us twice this season.
Yeah, but what I was saying is you have taken the pressure off that, you know, you're not under the pressure mentally as much now. We are in control of our destination.
And we've got momentum, which we've tended to do well with under Emery. When we get momentum, we tend to keep on moving.
And this is the thing why we needed to win the three. We needed to get some momentum going because we've been stuttering in performances, never mind results.
For about 6 weeks, it had been a bit clunky on the pitch.
Since the City game, we're exhausted against Arsenal, so we did really well in Arsenal to get that one over the line. So after that, those two fantastic results, we've been out of sorts. And we're not the finished product by any means. Against Luton and Forest, you know, you're suddenly allowing them to score two goals. It's like, you know, what the fuck's going on there?
Also showed some real moments of quality. Strangely, in first halves, you know, you think first half at Sheffield United, first half at Fulham, we were great. First half against Forest and the same in the trip to Luton. We've tended to be starting games well and then taking our foot off the gas a bit.
Yeah, but they are in the future. This was the now. I thought Luton were, as we discussed, missing, you know, one or two key defensive, whether it's in midfield or, you know, at the back, that perhaps they had a kind of a renaissance period where, I mean, big teams have gone there. Liverpool didn't win there. Arsenal, I think United, they, you know, went down to the wire, didn't it?
Yeah, well, Arsenal won it at the death. Man U probably were very lucky to get away with it. I think Chelsea were 3-0 up there and they nearly got level and got a draw. Most teams, it's strangely, I think one of the only teams to go there and win by clear goals is Sheffield United, of all people.
Yeah.
And I think they've only failed to score once.
The first half, it was looking like there was only going to be one winner and Villa potentially were going to do this fairly comfortable.
Oh, it was one-way traffic, wasn't it, pretty much the whole time?
Yeah, from the very start. I mean, there was just space in behind. I mean, Luton's fullbacks were stepping up and Villa were just dinking the ball into Watkins to run the channels and he had acres of space. I mean, it was only a couple of minutes gone when he crossed the ball in and it sort of like was a chest height for Rams and he didn't know whether to go his foot or his head and ended up
doing neither. It was like an impression of Haaland.
And he really should have done better with that one.
Against United. Should have scored.
And then we kind of just grabbed control of the game, didn't we, in the first half? They were allowing us to play through the middle, out wide. They weren't really pressuring us particularly well at the back. Luton looked pretty poor. It was kind of similar to the game at Villa Park, actually, earlier in the season, where you're sort of thinking, what are Luton trying to do here? Because we'd both sort of expected Luton to really give it a good go in this one, and it'd be a difficult game, which it proved to be in the second half. But frankly, by half time, we should have been like four up at least, potentially. And obviously, Watkins, he had a big chance before the actual goal came in. The keeper had already made a great save from Ramsey. Watkins, a header from a corner, which is kind of rare, but a good striker's goal. And even when Ramsey came off, who I thought had played well for Rodgers, it continued to be one-way traffic. You know, the second goal was a really great finish from Watkins. Rodgers goes really close to the keeper, makes another brilliant save, and Watkins hits the post. You know, on another day, they all go in. Watkins has a hat-trick, and it's...
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Done?
Yep. Well, I mean, the second goal, just to compact it, I mean, we're going to get onto the referee in the second half more so than the first half, but Watkins again was getting harsh treatment from, I think it was Mengi. It was like Meng the Merciless against him.
Yeah.
He was just...
They were shirt pulling all the time, weren't they?
Neck pulling and everything else. There was videos going around and social media about it there. And Watkins like breathed on him once and the free kick went against Watkins. not again. I mean, every week the same again, but this time Villa did get a free kick and Louise just lobs it over the top. Watkins times his run perfectly. His touch with his left foot just sets it out for his right and he just curls it in. And you're actually amazed to see the flag go up. You're going, no, he can't be offside. Nobody would be offside there looking along the line in a quick free kick. And so it proved. I mean, it was a good yard and a half onside. And I have no idea why the ref or the linesman lifted his flag.
Guessing probably.
Yeah.
But I mean, without their keeper having a great half, we'd have been...
He did home and make some good saves, to be honest.
He did. Yeah. The one from Rodgers is an incredible save. Mm-hmm. You know, if Martinez makes that one, we're waxing lyrical.
But in Luton's defence, they did make a bit of a tactical blunder in the first. I mean, they lost Bale after 6 minutes. And
Alfie Who we didn't Doherty even think would play because he was injured, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. He came off injured against City and he probably shouldn't have played in the first place.
Doherty moved into the cover centre-back and... as we saw, like straight from the second half, whenever he moved back into sort of his wide left position, then Luton started causing problems a lot because he's got a great delivery on him.
I think Mengi's a unit, isn't he?
Yeah.
And at one point he had an injury and I thought, oh, if he's going off, we're it's happy days. We're going to run through them here. But he managed to run it off. But going into half time, I mean, like the Forest game was different. We were 3-0 up in that and then they scored at... What's the first thing I said to you, Chris, before the kickoff of the second half? Oh, I think it was to Ben, who was with us. I said, oh, early Forest goal here in the second half and game on. And that's exactly what happened. You felt like that game, there was a momentum switch, even though we were 2 goals up by halftime. But in this one, you just thought, there's nothing going to happen in this game.
Well, at that point, Luton had offered so little.
Of course, you know, Luton score, that pitch, that crowd, if they got enough time, they could make it uncomfortable for you, but they only looked like Villa were going to be the team that scores the next goal.
Yeah,
at half time anyway.
But there was a sort of like a cynical change in Luton's tactics, I would say. I mean, especially Chung, the ex Blue Nose player. Every time he got the ball in the second half, when he got to about 30 yards out in a wide position, he just fell over, and like Michael Oliver bought every single dive. I mean, the final total of fouls to Villa, 19 fouls Villa committed compared to 8 by Luton. I mean, in a reasonably competitive and a not bad-tempered in any way game, that should be more equal than that. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous how many free kicks
they
got.
That's their tactic, isn't it? To get free kicks in wide areas to get lump it in, basically.
Yeah.
Well, that was the only way they were going to hurt Villa was set pieces, isn't it? And you know, it's frustrating with the ref. I was also frustrated with Villa. There were certain areas where you thought you don't need to get involved there. You have to be a little bit smarter. And I think, you know, Douglas, Bailey, Rogers all got bookings quite quickly towards the end of the first half and start of the second. And then all of a sudden, you've kind of got Bailey and Rogers in your wide areas coming under pressure and they're both on yellow cards. So they're naturally having to back off. And then, of course, the goal comes.
Bosh, and it's game 2-2. On.
And we've said this so many times that when Villa concede one, they tend to concede two. It's happened in 2 games, you know. Obviously, this was just in the second half. But Forest scored, a couple of goals in a sort of 10-minute period. Newcastle did. Chelsea did a few weeks ago. Luton have done in this game. It seems to be when Villa take that first hit, it takes them a little while to kind of readjust.
Who are we blaming for the goals?
Well, this is the thing. We, after the match, Chris and I were speaking, if we could blame anyone for the goals, but you couldn't really. I mean, it was a good delivery in for the second one. The first one is a corner.
It's just ends up in the first one, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Matty Cash does brilliantly on the line, doesn't he?
Yeah, fantastic. Cleared the ball off the line. Somehow it still stays in play. Konsa gets sort of out-muscled and hauled down. The ball goes back in, then pinball. Chong eventually tucks it away. The second one, the only thing that Villa did wrong was give away the initial free kicks, because whenever it gets to that position, you know, a great ball in, free kick tucked away. I mean, what are you going to do?
I mean, it's a good one. You'd probably say the ball shouldn't be able to travel that far. You know, if someone is volleying a ball that's come that far, it means somebody's not tracking their man. You know, if someone gets it with a great header, you go, wow, what a, you know, if someone's volleying it, I always think from things like corners and free kicks. It means somebody hasn't picked up their man.
Question. How can a team that's dominated the game so much, suddenly they're just relentlessly on the back foot and push back so much? How did we lose a grip like that? To the extent Emery thought, fuck this, and made four changes.
Well, the thing is, the ball, what Villa dominated the game in the first half because the ball was on the deck, the ball was in play.
Yeah.
In the second half, the ball wasn't in play. It was like stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. It was like an NFL game. It was all set plays the whole second half.
So they were breaking up our momentum.
I thought first half Villa were very good, to be fair. Second half, I actually thought Luton were good. You can see why against the top sides. They've really caused them problems because all the sides at the top of the table, we all kind of play, I love being able to say we, by the way, at the top sides in the league. They all play in a very similar way. They want to control the game, strangle the opposition, monopolise possession, etc. Luton are like, bollocks to this. It's kind of like an FA Cup game. It's like, we're going to make this crash bang wallet. We're going to bully you. We're going to fight. And you saw the midfield that were pulling Luton all over the place. You know, McGinn, Louise, Rodgers a little bit in the second half. Couldn't get on the ball. Tielemans, yeah. Game passed him by. It passed him by a little bit in the first half, to be fair, because Villa were a little bit more direct. But second half, Villa's midfield just couldn't get on the ball. I think Luton made a conscious effort to go, fuck this. If it's head-to-head in midfield, we're losing that battle and we'll have lost it. Whereas actually, let's get it wide. Let's go after the fullbacks and push the wingers back, which they did. You know, Bailey wasn't able to get at them. Rodgers, I can't remember carrying the ball in the second half. And I think they were very effective. And I think you just have to give them credit in that sense that actually they found a way to come out and counter-punch, which, you know, a lot of teams against Villa this year haven't been able to do.
Yeah,
Luton did and played to their strengths, which is putting the ball in the air, put it in the box, bully, maybe get a little bit of luck, but I think you always earn that luck. And when your keeper's played the way he has, maybe you go in at 2-0 going, fucking hell, we're lucky here. This should be completely dead and buried. We're still in it and you never know what can happen if we get one back. One became two.
Does anybody watch the Arsenal game? No, they've got a bit of fight in them. So
massively, yeah. You know, they don't get hammered very often. You know, the Man City game in midweek in that FA Cup game was a real anomaly for them, especially at home.
But when you look at the stats on paper, it's not as if they were wiped out. It was like City were taking their chances.
Yeah, they were really clinical. I mean, at 2-2, you know, in Match Club, I was saying, Emery, you need to react here because this is the kind of game that has got Old Trafford written all over it again, where we just could not. And I don't know why we can't at the moment. Maybe it's a slight personnel thing, but we can't seem to stem the tide in games when things really start to slip against us. Luckily in this one, I mean, if you're making four changes with 10 minutes to go where you're bringing on Digne, Diaby, Zaniolo, Irogbenham, I mean, you're bringing on, you know, that's a position Villa haven't generally tended to be in much in recent years, being able to bring that level of play, especially Digne and Diaby. Zaniolo's an international. You know, you're bringing on quality players. And I always felt that Luton were on top, but we would still maybe get a chance.
Was it a desperate last throw of the dice? Because I'm sure people would be framing this. Oh, Emery, tactical master, brings on four.
I'd say maybe.
I thought yes. It was like, you've got to do something drastic here because these players are getting bamboozled and there needs to be, you need to shake it up.
And I'm thinking, literally
shake it up.
Yeah, in that scenario, I think having a player like Digne, who's, you know, been a club captain in the Premier League, he's a seasoned international for France, just a calm head. And actually, let's be honest, in the first half of the season, when Villa were playing some of the best stuff they've been doing, Digne was in the team.
Well, he's a better battler as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think he came off the pitch again with a bloody ice pack around his face. He's just smashed to pieces. But I thought it was really fitting, actually, that the two guys who came off the bench, who've probably been a bit frustrated with their minutes that they've got recently, actually combined fantastically. I mean, I saw a Luton podcast reacting to the game and they were like, oh, you know, you've done all that hard work to get back into it. How have we lost this game? And we switched off. And actually, you look at it back and you go, I'll give them 10% of that. But really, Diaby picks the pass. It's a brilliant ball. And Digne's just got to get there, get his head on it, and he probably scores. And he does. It's a fantastic goal to win the game, considering it's backs to the wall at this point. And that's, to me, that's a big tick that Villa can sort of come, you know, get knocked into a corner, but actually get away from it. Because that's what Liverpool did. That's what Arsenal did fantastically at Luton.
That's the cliche phrase is dig out a result.
Dig out a result. It was big. It was really big, especially knowing that United had the game the day after.
Question. Phil Short can answer this. We'll start to anyway. Last season, end of last season, notoriously good shutting down games, seeing them out, not even a sniff of a team potentially scoring against us. Whether we're bringing on fullbacks to stand in front of our fullbacks, Whether we're playing a back nine, back 10, whether we're time wasting like motherfuckers, we would squeeze the life out of the game and take the result. Whatever result we wanted at that point, if we're 2-1 up, the game's going to end 2-1. Why is this not the case now?
Well, the reason it's not the case now is because Villa have a weakness. The weakness is across into the box. If you're Hail Mary in NFL, if you're lobbing that into Villa's box, you have Mings who's throwing his head at it. He's hoofing it. It's getting out of there. It's gone. It's a pointless thing to do to cross the ball in the box. Now, if you're crossing the ball into the Villa box, if you can avoid Konsa, there's a good chance somebody's getting their head on it.
Is this being targeted? Because obviously Manchester United,
yes,
their fullback whips it in, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Tomane scores from the header.
We're not a massively tall team, and I think the way we defend, we're almost trying to defend the second ball, so we're almost surrendering a lot of first ball, which that can't be great.
Yeah.
I think teams just know that we've got such a defined way of playing now, and it's evolved, and it's, you know, when it works, it's pretty fucking slick, isn't it? And we can take it to anyone. But actually, if you simplify your game, you know, I think if you try and go toe to toe with Villa, we've seen that, you know, teams like Brighton and West Ham came to Villa Park, didn't they? And they just battered. But actually, if you play the way Luton did, or, you know, you'd be really strong in the midfield like Newcastle were, and you go man to man, and almost a very pragmatic, well-organised approach. You saw it with Mostar in Europe and a couple of the games we've played in Europe this season. Teams who aren't sort of too proud and go, no, we play our way, we want to have a go at Villa. Actually, if you stifle the game and make it a crap spectacle, then I think you're right in the game. Because Villa want to control
Villa doing
the tempo.
Like they used to do. They would make the final 20 minutes tedious as fuck.
Yeah. It was strange, actually. Because
result out.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking with 10 minutes to go, if he was in the squad anymore, you'd have probably thrown on someone like a Dendonka, just somebody who can get under the high ball. Yeah. Luckily, you know, Emery knows more than me, clearly and made the change that won him the game.
Because as Phil says, that obviously without Mings, when you're defending a lead, obviously teams get a bit more direct, they get a bit more desperate, but that suits Mings because he's
bread and butter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But without that, and if they're getting desperate and they're going a bit longer, or as Phil says, a diagonal ball, which has checked out in several games. But we've got to find a way. This is just a matter of personnel, isn't it? Because Konsa, in my eyes, Konsa was always a great supplementary centre back to Mings. Mm-hmm. You know, Mings attacks the ball, Konsa does the
he's got the groundwork. You know, yeah, I mean, a one-to-one, yeah, in a sort of a foot race or whatever. Konsa, we saw his stats last season, even the start of this season, he was virtually untouched in that scenario.
But when Konsa comes in and he's alongside Longley, then he's having to be the physical presence, which that isn't him, is it, in a nutshell? He's not like the mainstay of your defensive.
Well, he's not an aerially dominant defender. I still think he's a player you'd always play. But, and of course, when you play Torres is tall, but he's not a dominant, he's the ball player, he's silky, he runs the game for you. And that's great, but it has to be working for that to be the one.
So let's say all bets are off and they're chasing a game and they do go a bit more direct and do get a bit more physical, that's where we haven't potentially got the deterrent to that.
No, and as I said, like someone like a Dendonka. Dendonka was very good for a certain thing, wasn't he, for sort of spoiling a game. I remember back in the Championship days, you'd always have like...
He's just spoiling the game. Oh, it's just
in a good way. I remember back in the Championship days, sort of Bruce or even Smith at times would bring on Jedinak, and you knew what Jedinak was going to do. He'd just sit in front of the back four and he'd repel everything. That's what Dendonka was really good at. I look at, you know, he brought Erogbunam on and I actually thought, fucking hell, that's a really difficult game to bring a player on in that position where you're putting him under a high ball against a team who are right on top of you. And he tried his best, but it's a real blessing by fire. You'd hope he's learned something from that. But
yeah, I mean, he only got six touches, did he? He wouldn't want an aerial, which you would hope he would get involved in that side of things with his height.
But I do think it's good, you know, with 10 minutes to go, you can bring Diaby on and the opposition are going to go, fucking hell, we're going to need to keep the ball here because if we give the ball away and it gets into wide areas or we get hit on the break, Diaby, Watkins can demolish you on the break.
Right, well, we saw it through and big win.
And even bigger with City beating United, of course.
Yeah, but we kind of expected that. Even when United were 1-0 up, it was fool's gold, wasn't it?
Oh, Man United just fucking parked the bus, didn't it?
It was only a matter of time. But I think more important in the last three games was to get those results and get the momentum going. And now we're looking at, hopefully we can, that will inject a bit of belief in the coming games. Because Spurs is winnable, Ajax is winnable. At the same time, they are dangerous games.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we shall see a more polished performance from Villa, and also getting the results that we want by being a bit more polished. Big stats of the game.
The big stat of the game is combinations. Bailey and Watkins, the pair have combined for 7 Premier League goals this season, which is more than any other duo. And if you're looking in Villa's recent history, York and Milosevic had 8. So you would hope that Watkins and Bailey will break that. If not in the next game, in the next...
Surely With and Shaw had much, much more than 8.
I know, but sure, the Premier League football only started in 1992.
Yeah, of course. Well, I did say on the last show, you do feel there is a sense that it is a duo now, and the stats are backing that up, backing up the eyeball test. Fantasy Premier League player of the game, I'm guessing Watkins.
Yes, you're guessing correct with 13 points.
Well, I had him as my captain, so I got 26.
I haven't got over the superstition of the only Villa player I have in my team's Chambers on the bench, third sub.
Medium Muppets. Right, Phil, what's in the trough this week?
Oh, it's a quick one, but it's we're in definite Muppet territory. It's the Birmingham Mail are back, and it's just for this. It's an absolute stonker of a headline, this one. Man United handed Premier League points deduction boost over Aston Villa as the table reshuffles.
This is one that, as somebody said in Match Club, I've read that headline 10 times. I still can't work out what the hell it's on about.
It's meant to make you think, isn't it, that there's something
that's
happened.
United have got an advantage now. Oh, what is it?
It's like a team has suddenly just been like erased from existence and all their points have been redistributed. That's the only way that headline makes sense, but it hasn't. I mean, it's now we know it's the way the papers work. It's going to be the subheader that puts the headline on. But I mean, come on, if you're writing this, you have to take some control. I mean, it was Townley, John Townley did the piece itself. I mean, you're just setting yourself up for some criticism.
I just scanned the piece just in terms of how it referred to the headline, and it seems to be the piece is simply about Everton's situation, and that's it, really.
Yeah, that's all it's about. I mean, it just lists Everton's situation, and then there's one line that it throws in, and this was just before the Luton game. It goes, however, now that the Hatters have an even greater incentive to win points after Everton climbed the table, this could come as a boost for United, who are waiting for Villa to drop points. And you're just like,
that is
fucking
just
hell.
Tenuous bullshit, really.
Yeah.
Hey ho, before we go, a big shout out to the My Old Medicine members for, as always, supporting the show, the new kids on the block this week. Extra special thank you to them, to Mr. Paul Lucas, to Mr. Paul Stanford, to Mr. Travis Sarandos, and if you become an annual My Old Mensa member, you get a month free, which is just over 10%. No, actually, it's the other way around. You get 10% free, which is just over a month. And upping his pledge, Mr. Lee O'Brien, the heart and soul of Match Club, has renewed his contract, extended his contract for another year. So thank you very much, Lee, for honouring us with your presence once again. If you become a My Old Mensa member, you do get ad-free versions of the show, access to Match Club, which is our 24/7 community that meets 4 live podcasts during away games. So it can be, sometimes it can turn into an extravaganza before the game, half time, and after. Was it Fulham that we were almost 3 hours after the game chatting away?
That was an epic one. It hasn't been seen since the days of lockdown, where no one had anywhere to be.
Still, we haven't found things to do since lockdown. And there'll also be extra shows once we get into find our feet again. There's a few Europa Vision shows to catch up once they are edited and done. Then I will slide a few things that I have owed you for the last few weeks. Some alpha intel on various Villa things. So please do go to myomensed.com. Check out the menu link, which is on the mobile devices. It's those 3 bars to the top left, which access the menu. Click on membership to get more details there. Thank you very much. Don't forget to follow the show on socials at My Old Man Said. Right, I've got some editing to do. They've got a plane to catch. Got some Dutch teams to be beaten.
Yeah, if you can make sure you catch the flight without stressful amounts of being nearly being late this time, please.
Oh, don't worry. The traffic's much better this time. We were in the dark zone last time of work runs and school runs at the time I was getting. I didn't move around this corner of my house.
Well, Uber thought you'd like were dead or something, didn't it?
Yeah. No, it gave me two or three warnings. We are concerned. You haven't moved for the last 10 minutes. Are you okay? Are you okay? We will send a helicopter to get you out of there.
And the fact that I'm sat on a flight to Warsaw stressing, where the fuck is David? David walks up the aisle, the last one on the plane, and he's the only one who has a drink.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck off.
Right. Until that adventure unfolds, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.